Today on The Breakdown, we're back and we're here with force. Why, you ask? Because it's the final two players in the World Series of Poker bracelet event number 3, the Mystery Millions. That's where you don't know how many millions are in the prize pool. They will not tell you. It's a mystery. It's like Scooby-Doo. You got to Scooby-Doo this thing. These are lies, obviously. But there are millions of dollars in the prize pool. In fact, almost $17 million. And first place is a chunky, chunky, full-on $1 million. These guys have both already locked up almost $600,000, and we are going to play a little hand of poker, aren't we, Grant? We're going to have a little back and forth with the chippy chips, and, well, it's one of those spots where we often say, when we're analyzing a hand on this show, you know, it's not a good story, but does it matter, right? It doesn't matter it's not a good story because the guy can't call anyway. We often say things like that. Well, maybe one of these players is going to stand up for the other side. He's gonna have a little response, a little reciprocity in this debate. And we're going to get into all of it, all of the back and forth, the chips, the cards. Don't forget about the cards. There's the dealer and the cameras. We're doing it all right now in The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Okay.
1 minute and 22 seconds, baby.
What do you mean we're back?
I don't know. You went away for a little while.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in a week.
To the listeners, that sounds like, you know, we've been off for a month or something.
I like letting them in though, you know? Like, here's a little window into my life. I'm not trying to hide. I want to be seen.
All right, what's your hygiene routine?
I'm not talking about that.
Because there is none. Oh,
snappers. Yeah, my hygiene routine. Can you be a little more specific? I will talk about it. What do you mean?
What's your eyebrow game like?
Oh, it's bad. It's real bad. I look through them and pluck sometimes.
Yeah.
And also get my little electric razor and shave them down a little bit here and there. And it's not great. It's not great.
Have you ever considered shaving your armpits for aerodynamism?
Or for any other reason? I have not. Have you?
Nope. Just curious.
I haven't considered it. I've just done it. I just
right.
do it.
Rote. Yeah, I can't stop it.
Why would I consider it? It's an obvious thing. No, I haven't considered shaving mine armpits. Do you know many folks who, no, I guess it's many men.
Swimmers. Many, swimmers do it.
Swimmers. The Michael Phelps people.
Yeah, the Phelps types.
Right. Yeah, they do. And they do it for fashion.
Aerodynamics.
They do it because they like the tickle of the cool, cool water on the inside.
It probably does feel kind of nice.
It probably does.
It's like, ooh.
You know, I remember reading about this, that Michael Phelps consumes, or used to.
20,000 calories a day.
Yeah, with pancakes and waffles and French toast and all these wonderful breakfast foods. And the reason why he is not fat
is because of all of the calories that it burned?
Yeah, the thermal load of the water. It's actually the coldness of the water.
Oh, really?
His body, just to keep him warm, burns up so much. That's because otherwise, like, you can't do enough exercise to burn all the calories that he ate and be that fit. It was physically impossible. And so, like, a scientist or some dude, whatever, like, researched it because he's like, how is this? It can't be. Mm. And yet it is. And that was the answer. It's like, the water's so fucking cold that his body's got to burn up that fat. Just to keep them alive.
With athletes like that, I always wonder about, like, yeah, they're in shape for that period of time, but are they doing harm to their organs by eating like that?
Mm.
You know, like, I've heard with runners, you know, runners burn a ton of calories and they eat a ton of really fatty food and high-carb food. But I think they have a slightly higher rate of cardiovascular illness and stuff later in life, which you would think the opposite because they've exercised their heart so much and done so well for it. But they're eating and so many calories and probably in unhealthy ways.
I mean, it could be that. It could be other reasons why that's it could be. Too, right? It could be like the tracks or something in the manufacturing of the track that fucks up your heart. I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
I'm just saying there's a lot of potential factors.
It could also be alcohol. So a conversation that happened years ago, do you remember? We had an Olympic gold medalist play on Poker Time.
I do remember that.
Michael Cernovich, something like that.
Sure,
Cernowitz.
Cernowitz, maybe?
I don't know.
I don't know, but
sorry,
I remember.
Sorry if you're listening. I don't remember your last name. You won a gold medal. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But one of the conversations he had at the table was about how, like, maybe he was talking about a previous generation of runners, but a lot of runners were alcoholics because they would just be able to they burn so many calories, they would never get hangovers, and they would burn off the booze so fast that there was like a huge drinking culture that was really unhealthy surrounding like elite level runners.
I wonder if, and I know this is a Eastern thing, and I don't really subscribe to this even, but I'm going to walk this path for a moment.
Go for
it. I wonder if like if you work your body that hard for that long, like put that much sort of stress just physically of like the running or whatever it is, if there's actually is a long-term cost to that too, if you sort of wear down.
If you work it harder than like you're supposed to on a day, like,
yes,
you know, like it's good to run four times a week, a couple miles as a normal human. But if you're running 20 miles a day every day, it's like too much
for like 10 years. Yeah. Or whatever. And before those 10 years you were running 20 miles every other day. And
yeah,
after that you're running 20 miles, and yeah, you're pushing your body well past its prescribed limits to be the best in the world, or
maybe
trying to be one of the best in the world, if there's actually a long-term cost.
Could
it
be.
It would make sense if there was.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? We're not doctors.
It might also exacerbate any like heart problems that you already had, like small things, just make it worse.
Yeah.
So I think the takeaway here is if you have anything possibly wrong with you, don't do exercise and be an alcoholic.
Right.
And you're good.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
So we solved heart disease.
It's a really, like, the people are looking for diets that they can really get behind. Here's a diet. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, whatever will be. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. I mean, according to you,
you can only hurt yourself by exercising.
Right.
It's the only outcome is you lose years from your life.
I always wondered if, you know, right now they have like calorie counters and stuff like that, but I actually thought about this in my life many times even. If they instead told you how much time you were costing yourself by eating this thing, whatever, they put a steak in front of you and it says like -3 days. And like, so like you literally lose 3 days of expectation of longevity.
Right.
Something like that. If that would, how much that would change people's thing. Cause a lot of things, even like, you know, a candy bar or a sundae wouldn't be much. It might be like 2 minutes or something, you know, like.
I don't know. That's a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah.
As far as like an app or
Black Mirror episode, really.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even as something to market like the Atkins diet or Jenny Craig or whatever, instead of like you're counting your points because Jenny Craig loves you, it's like you're counting your points because you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like this is going to kill you. And so we'd have to come up with like metrics of how to decide how many minutes or hours or days each thing would take off your life.
There is a metric that exists already called MORTS.
Yeah, yeah, MORTS.
Right,
yeah.
And so of course, like
we have to convert that to seconds.
Sure,
minutes,
sure. But there's
days.
But like they've already figured out basically everything in MORTS. Like so, like eating a banana is like 2 micromorts or something like that.
Like,
but flying on an airplane is like 40,000 morts or I don't know.
Micromorts, right? Because one mort is death, right?
No. I don't know what it is, but no. One mort is not death. I don't think. It's been a while since I read about morts.
Yeah.
But yeah, but they've like figured out basically everything in terms of morts, you know, and life EV, if you will.
From like an actuary perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you should then be able to, there's got to be a way to translate that into time pretty easily, I would think, if you can see it all, right?
Yeah.
You should be able to say this equals this and this equals this. So it wouldn't be that hard, is what I'm getting to actually create this app.
Only if there's current data on like the morts of eating a steak. Which, I don't know, they're doing more things like flying on an airplane.
I mean, literally a banana was, they had done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't make that up. I always remembered that a banana was like 2 micromorts. And they explained why. The guy who was doing it was like, because actually, if you eat, bananas are good for you, but if you eat a banana every day, if you do that, like, there's a little thing with it over time and blah,
so
blah, blah.
So is there anything that's not a mort or minus micromort?
That's a great question.
Because I think we need some positivity within our program to make people feel good. Like,
everything will kill you.
With the red, you need the green, right?
Yeah.
You love to see the line going up. You love to see the green.
I don't think that's the way this works. I think morts is just all negative, man. Morts is all like, you're fucking going to die sooner.
I know that morts are, but what I'm saying is for your...
You need like homers?
For your dietary product to succeed, you need to have some sort of incentive to make people feel good about what they're doing, not just bad.
I think you have been cuckolded by
that's an interesting term.
Thank you. By the advertising industry into believing that this is how people operate. But you know what? I make my money, my friend, on what people really want, not what they say they want.
And they want to be told they're going to die earlier every day.
No, they don't want to feel good about themselves. That's why the Matrix didn't work the first time. They lost crops, seasons and seasons of crops, right? Because they did a fucking utopia, and instead they had to take it back where everyone's miserable. Same idea with this cool dietary app we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we need like Marky Mark or someone to be the face of this thing.
Why?
I'm getting to it. Every time they eat something or do something, it doesn't just have to be eating. You're like, oh, I'm going to cross the street, and Marky Mark just shows up on your face like, you're going to die 10 seconds sooner, you idiot, something like that. And you're like, I'm doing it anyway, Marky Mark, and then you walk across the street.
And you're fine.
Yeah. I mean, or you die. Yeah. Once in a while, you die, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. The only way to gain green, if you will, in this is to never move and starve to death. Never move and never eat.
Yeah.
And never let anyone touch you.
Right.
And I mean ever.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, and then you're going to...
You'll make it a few days.
You might live forever. There's a...
breath areas.
A hypothesis that babies are essentially perfect and self-healing, perfect self-healing devices and essentially are immortal, but then they get toxified by all the food they eat and this and that, and they like slowly lose the ability to do all those things. That's pretty brilliant, right? By the way, has anyone tried this out? All you gotta do is like cut off a baby's hand and you'll know pretty soon if they can do it or not.
Wow.
I'm not encouraging someone to do that, to be clear, because that would
sounds
be
like you are.
I know. So I'm like coming in to save the day on this. That would be a terrible
You're
idea.
You're saving the day? Please. That's your role here?
If someone has like a cleaver over a baby's hand and they're hearing this, yes, I'm saving that day right now. Thank you. You're welcome. Don't do it. It probably won't work the way we're talking about it. I don't feel good about it. Please don't do it. Please, please, please. It's a terrible idea. I'm sure it won't work. That's just a thing I read about once.
So is that like a Gwyneth Paltrow thing? It feels like a Gwyneth Paltrow thing.
It might be a Paltrowian type thing. Yeah. Paltrowian thing.
It's like you go to the conference with Gwyneth Paltrow and Kanye West and you learn about this type of shit.
I used to hang out with those kinds of people a lot. It was a long time ago.
Why did you do that to yourself?
Because So, you know, my background is being with working with families with autism, right? So where I was, that center had a lot of people who were in that of that sort of persuasion, you know, like that variety.
They buy the egg and they put it in their vagina.
I mean, I don't know about that, but, you know, there was belief in alternative medicine very much so, and not like well past chiropractic kind of alternative medicine. There was at least some people believing in Reiki and all that kind of stuff, and... You know, I'm sure some people in our audience believe in Reiki, too. I do not, to be clear.
Anybody who's listened for a while knows that the mystic arts are not really the things that we believe in.
It's true. We believe in math and, you know, logic and, you know.
And great hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, and potato chips, you know. Like, can I touch it? Can I eat it? I believe in it.
Yeah.
Will it kill me? I want it. You know?
Give it to me. Give me morts.
Yeah. Wouldn't this be cool if we create this app and Marky Mark's telling everyone they're going to die, you know, in a certain amount of time, and it actually speeds up people dying because they're like, oh, because I have a theory. I'm just going off here. I have a theory that a lot of people, you know, are slowly trying to kill themselves. Anyway.
So it's like a way to, like, how can I most efficiently eat myself to death?
I've just knocked another 10 minutes off my life with this double-decker pizza from Pizza Hut, you know, with the stuffed crust. This is great. That's 10 minutes less I have to suffer.
I thought of a great, you've thought of all the logistics, and I applaud you for that. I think I've figured out the marketing.
Great.
Do you know the Britney Spears song, Gimme More?
I do not.
It's not very good, and it's bad, but, you know, instead of that, you could just go with Gimme Morts.
And then have
like a cover of that song.
Yep, that's not bad. We could do another Britney Spears song one more time. It could be one more time.
That's a little...
Also, the...
One more time? Yeah.
One more time. That's
You can really tell the you can really guys tell with the
helmets. What are the guys with the helmets?
Daft Punk.
Yeah, Daft Punk. They do that song one more time.
Yeah.
Also,
you also can't hear the difference at all. It's like impossible.
I think what we would do, not to speak for these artists, but clearly what we would do is we would license both songs and combine them into one and be like the One More Time by Daft Punk, but then it'd be like, hit me baby one more time at the same, you know, over it. That would be brilliant. The way they jam up
music. And everybody will be eating pizza until they die.
you know how they do it, the way they jam up those songs.
Yeah, they jam them up.
Like Free Bird and some rap song or something.
Yeah, they Free Bird rap it.
Yeah. Is Free Bird still a thing? It was a thing when I was growing up.
Yeah,
still a thing.
I think people still like Freebird.
Do they still like jokingly and ironically like say play Freebird?
I think a lot less, thankfully, than they used to do that. Because it's not funny when you just it's derivative and nobody's happy with it.
It wasn't funny ever.
Yeah,
ever. For the first time, it was probably funny, and maybe the second.
It's like the being at a concert version of all of the worst poker cliches that people say at that table.
Yes,
like the you play that crap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ugh. It's not clever. You didn't think of it. It's not original. Everyone's heard it. No one thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
Although it is always interesting when you're at the poker table and someone makes one of those jokes and someone seems to genuinely laugh for a while.
I feel it's like it happens almost every time.
Yeah, that's why they keep making the jokes, right? Yeah. They're getting this positive feedback. What they need is Marky Mark to tell them they've just lost 10 minutes off their life.
That's the real, you know, you found it. Because we're niche podcasters. We're for poker people.
Yeah.
So you found out how we can advertise properly. We have Marky Mark. Of course, this is who we're going to use.
It's still got to be Marky Mark.
But we're going to record him saying negative things about all of the poker cliches we can think and put them in the app. And anytime somebody says it at the table, you pull it up on your phone and you have Marky Mark yell at them about how dumb it was that they just said something like that.
I mean, I would pay $3.99 for that. I got to tell you right now.
Yeah.
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 Marky Mark, if you're listening, hit us up on the Twitters.
This is actually an idea that I want to do, but we need the celebrities to make
it. You need a celebrity. You could do a poker celebrity though, and we have access to some
of those. But it's not as good. Like Marky Mark is better than a poker celebrity.
I agree.
You'd want to have variety. I'd want Werner Herzog in there.
That's a tougher one. I think we could actually pull it off with poker celebrities. Like right now, with our very low level of like D or F list pokers.
We could definitely do it.
It's enough that we could reach, like, enough people know who we are. Jason Kuhn would do at least one or two of those for us, right? Come on. Of course he would.
He has to. It's contractual.
It's basically, and Phil Hellmuth wouldn't, but would secretly wish he had.
Yeah, he'd be like, I wish I could give these guys.
Mike Madison would ask us, and we would have to.
We would have to ask him to leave again.
Like, please do not. Mike Madison, by the way, saying he should be in the Hooker Hall of Fame and making strong cases for it on Twitter.
Kind of agree.
Really? I kind of don't. Why do you agree?
This is the same debate we have about sports.
Yes.
Is it about greatness or is it about fame?
I think it's clearly about greatness.
Well, then he shouldn't. But if it's about...
It's not about the most famous person.
Right, but it's called the Hall of Fame.
I know. It's misnamed, though, right? No one ever said... Like, whenever they're trying to... Sports figures now, like, if they should get in the Hall of Fame, no one says, oh, well, he was way more famous than this other guy, so of course he should be in. That's never an argument
anyone makes. Rudy
should
be in the Hall of Fame.
Right, right. Yeah. Like, what was the name of the basketball player Jeremy on the Knicks?
Jeremy Lin,
right. He was worldwide famous there for a while. Ain't no one making that case that he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So I think it's clear it's about greatness.
Yeah, but that's dumb.
Is it?
They should call it the Hall of Greatness.
They should. But they didn't because it was like 1910 and they weren't thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of those things, I believe, where someone like you or me said, you sure you want to call it the Hall of Fame? Because that's kind of confusing. And they're like, everyone knows, man. Come on.
Yeah.
And then here we are. It's like with most valuable player. Here we are all these years later. And it's like, well, I guess you should have fucking named it something else because not everyone fucking gets it. Now, although with Hall of Fame, everyone does except for you, I guess.
No, I get it. I have a semantic argument.
Yeah. There. Just because.
And I could see Mike Madison making that semantic argument.
I could too. But he's not. He's not making that argument. He's arguing that he thinks he belongs in for his... play.
For his play.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you know, I won the national heads-up championship. I final tabled all these things. I won whatever this many this and whatever. And I'm like, dude, you were the fish at the table. You were one of the whales. Like,
yeah, he shouldn't
wake the fuck up.
He shouldn't be in it for that.
Like, I don't care if you won the national heads-up title once. Like, cool. Get the fuck out of here.
All right, but here's the question.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Mike Madison was a killer at cash games necessarily or anything, but should Tom Dwan be in the Poker Hall of Fame?
I think he should.
He did not. He doesn't have huge tournament accomplishments.
But he clearly was/is one of the best players in the world, right? For like a long
but
period of time.
But the thing with tournaments is there's metrics that you can use to...
They're bad metrics.
But they are objective.
They're not. We don't know what the buy-ins are. A lot of these guys may be in the fucking red. We don't even know. How is that objective? They just bought into a lot of times to expensive things. Like, how do we know?
Steph Curry might have just shot a lot of three-pointers. We don't really know how many.
But you know what I mean? The fact that we don't know who's profitable and how profitable they are, which is the only metric we should really be using. Actually, it should be better. There's a better metric than that, of course, which would be like, you know, profit per tournament or something like that.
I would argue
that
you are correct, but at least in tournaments, especially large, like I don't think you can use high rollers for this, but if you win more than one bracelet in large fields, there's probably something pretty good going on.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, no, of course. Everyone's got people who, even winning like one bracelet and going deep in another event, unless you've been doing this for 30 years, like that's impressive. And you probably have something going on that's different than being a great player, though, a truly great player who we talk about being in the Hall of Fame. I think Tom Dwan changed the conversation around poker and was playing in a different style than almost anyone else.
Mike Madison showed us the world of meth. Like,
you know, I was planning I'm doing a whole, I thought we were going to talk about Martin Cabral and all the cheating stuff. And here we are. And now we're deep in this thing.
We might make a separate dedicated Martin Cabral.
Yeah, let's do that.
Thing,
so. Let's do that.
So anyway, to put an exclamation point on my point that I was making.
Yes, please.
Forget the one bracelet, two bracelet things. I think if you have six bracelets, no matter, like, I'm not saying no matter what the buy-ins are, because from the perspective of I don't know how much the buy-ins are of this person who has six bracelets, you could probably assume they're pretty good.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What if most of those bracelets came before the moneymaker era?
Different.
Okay, so it's post moneymaker.
Yeah, like when it's big fields.
Okay, because that's a really big.
I mean,
difference.
If all of your bracelets are from like PLO8 from the 90s, right. And the fields were 18 people, then no, it's not that impressive.
It's not impressive at all.
But if you have six bracelets from 1,000 plus player fields, you're probably pretty good.
You might be pretty good, but you also might not be great, and you also might be a lifetime loser, even with six bracelets.
You might be, but it's a lot less likely, right, than the average player.
I mean, I happen to know, and I actually can bring this up because I've gotten the A-OK on this, that say the number two all-time money winner on Hendon Mob is broke, like legit broke.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Right. I know you know this, but I'm saying, like, now everyone else can know it, too. And that's Bryn Kenny we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, bankroll decisions are different than poker skill.
That is true. That is true. Lifestyle stuff is different.
He's clearly good at poker.
He's clearly good at poker.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Are you trying to argue?
I don't know what I'm trying to argue. I've like, sort of lost myself in this one.
That somebody with a Hendon like ours is just as likely to be good at poker as somebody with six bracelets.
No.
Okay.
I'm not. I'm saying we don't belong in the Poker Hall of Fame either.
I know that, but does somebody with six bracelets at least deserve consideration?
Oh, of course they deserve consideration. But I'm saying that is a very flawed metric and not the metric by
any
means.
What's the metric?
The metric, I think the first metric is probably just lifetime profit.
Which you can't ever know. If you are the
governing, why this is a problem.
If you're the governing body, so you use what you can.
Well,
what's actionable here, Levy? You just up with problems with no solutions? Thanks.
I mean, actionable would be, and I think they do, this is sort of a version of what the GPI is doing, right? The GPI is trying to track, I don't know if, are they tracking every tournament people are actually buying into? Or just, I don't think they are. I think they just track wins also.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure what the GPI is doing, though.
I don't know either.
That would be the way to do it, and that is actionable. Like, you should have access to that. I don't know, like, why do even tournaments not fucking publish everyone who entered instead of just who they paid? Why? Like, they have that information.
Because it's more work.
Right. But, like, if we're doing governing bodies, we're trying to do all this, they could get that information at least, and then they would have a better sense of it. They could say, at the end of the year, who actually made the most money in tournaments? That would be an interesting list. I would like to know that list, right?
Yeah, I would be interested in that as well.
By the way, the online stuff, you can see that, right? Like,
yeah, you can see
actual... they would actually track all that stuff. At least back in the day, I assume they still do. So, you know, it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, that would be cool.
None of this stuff is going to happen, though, so it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
And who cares anyway? The Poker Hall of Fame. I know if you're a big-time poker player, sure, it's nice to get in there, but like...
Yeah, nobody actually cares.
No one gives a fuck.
If I was, for some reason, voted into the Poker Hall of Fame tomorrow, it would not change anything about my life
be very happy for myself.
Yeah.
And less happy for you, admittedly. Because I think I deserve it more than you because of my resume.
Yeah, yeah.
My lifetime resume in poker and podcasting, quite frankly. My poker podcasting resume. The only way we're getting in is with podcasting, let's be frank.
Well, no shit. We don't play enough poker.
Right.
And we're not good enough.
And I don't think we're going to get in that way either. I got to tell you. If there was a wing for podcasters, which I don't think there is. You know, we've never even been nominated for like any of the big awards.
Which
is
bullshit, by the way.
It is, but fuck those guys, and that's the world.
I mean, it is. It's like an insiders club. We live in Portland,
yeah,
Oregon.
Whatever.
Who cares?
Who cares? What was the point of all this? We got way off track. We started complaining about.
You're trying to say that Martin Cabral should be in the Poker Hall of Fame.
Yes,
that's what you're trying to say.
He is a master of mind games.
That's the hill you're going to die on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Listen to our Martin Cabral emergency podcast, which we're going to make after this, I assume, and put out probably right around.
I don't know. We might make a video, and it might be tomorrow.
Okay, fine.
So just relax.
Look out for whatever it is, whatever piece of media we do.
And it might not ever come out.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the point, though. Like, if we could see what what people's actual profit was in poker, that would be really interesting to me, you know? And, like, it'd be cool if, like, oh, cool, Talal Shakirchi's got $6 million in wins or $10 million in earnings, and he's number 58 in all time, and guess what? He's down $7 million.
You just exemplified exactly why they will never do it.
Exactly. No. Right. Because this is all a big scam to trick the fucking whales into playing.
Yep.
Right. They don't want to track profit and loss. No. They're right not to in that way. Right. As you know, a pro poker player, I understand that side of it. But if we're trying to treat it as if we're going to have a Hall of Fame and shit like that, it's kind of weak to do it this way. But whatever. Who actually gives a fuck? No one. Right. Mike Matisow.
Is the Poker Hall of Fame associated with the World Series of Poker?
I doubt it.
Okay. If it were, that would be easier because then you could just be like, oh, based on how well you've done in the World Series of Poker, right? Like how many...
Oh, but they would never... I mean, the Poker Hall of Fame was essentially started by, you know, like a bunch of like Binion and Doyle and all those types of, you know, people of that ilk. And like they put all those, the people who they all thought was the best. Remember like the first World Series of Poker, they voted on who was the player of the tournament.
Yeah.
Right? And you just weren't allowed to vote for yourself. And that's how they did it, you know? So a lot of it's just like opinions anyway. Which is, you know, I guess how the Hall of Fames are.
That's how democracy works, man.
You know what? When you frame it like that,
it's changing. It's a beautiful thing. The eagle soars and the flag, it unfurls.
I'm trying to think of how I could do a Boston accent right now, but I'm afraid I'm going to screw it up.
Just pretend you're Ben Affleck.
I feel like I'm just going to fall right into the New York.
Pretend you're Matt
Damon. I'm going to do the Kennedy accent. I can hear myself.
Don't do the Kennedy accent.
I'm going to do it. Hey there.
Yeah, you did. You did it.
That's not Kennedy.
No, but it's not Boston.
It's not Boston, yeah. What's Boston? Like, park the car and have it yard.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. So Marky Mark would be like, you sound stupid. You sound real stupid. Stop making that dumb joke.
I think you're going to New Hampshire right now.
I feel like I'm like Minnesota even. Yeah.
Speaking of Minnesota, Chris Jones.
Hey, we got there.
Suggested this hand.
27 minutes.
He did not get credit for the last hand that he suggested.
Yeah.
He complained about it on Discord. And I'm giving him air for it, which is not what I should be doing.
Yeah, you're really
but
fucking that
it's
up.
Okay because we're going to shit on him for a while.
Are we?
Yeah, well, I'm just opening the door. I don't have anything specific.
I have nothing to evacuate.
I thought you hated Chris Jones.
I'm not the guy who hates Chris Jones.
I'm pretty sure you hate Chris Jones.
I think you're talking to yourself right now because I love Chris Jones. We're pals.
You're pals with
you
Chris
know,
Jones.
A thing happened that you may have missed, and it's this. One of our members of Discord came and played at a club in Portland.
Yeah, I was on a family trip.
You were not around, and I played with him for two nights, actually, him and his friend. It was great. It was a lot of fun. We played mixed game bomb pots. It was good stuff. And they then talked. He, like, sort of told everyone about the experience on Discord. And he said, like, you know, he played with the good poker guy, and there was the bad poker guy. And everyone then started talking about who the bad poker guy was without mentioning names. And someone even said, like, it's clear they both are going to read this and think they're the good poker guy. But it was very clear that I was the good poker guy and you're the bad one. And so I love these people now, and you can hate them if you want, but I'm on their side.
That guy is not from Minnesota. He's from Washington State.
No, I know. But even the Minnesota people were like, it's clear there's one good one and one bad one, and everyone knows who the good one is. And I'm like, I'm the cuddly one who everyone likes. You're the dick arrogant motherfucker, and that's that.
If that's what the Minnesota folk think, I don't mind. But the rest of the world doesn't have that opinion.
Oh, it'd be interesting to find out what, like, the Tennessee people think. You know?
Tennessee people are for sure on my side.
I want to see the exit polls, man.
Yeah, Nashville, that's my town, baby.
Nashville is actually, I like Nashville.
I've never been.
Oh.
Chris Jones! Suggested it on Discord.
Good job.
Despite Minnesota not yet having the internet. He must have had to work pretty hard at that. You know, travel to Wisconsin.
He just read in the newspaper. He read about it, the hand in the newspaper.
Ah, yeah, he sent in the classifieds, etc. Discord is, there's a link in the description. Get you to our Discord channel so you can talk to Chris Jones and other people from Minnesota.
Right.
And, you know, other states and countries as well. Maybe space. We don't know for sure. They don't have to declare where they're from.
Very exciting.
Don't ruin my...
Sorry, I'm sorry. You're right.
That's don't. Yuck.
That was bad. It was bad. It was on me, and it was bad.
Don't yuck my yum, man. that's a kid thing.
Oh.
You're not supposed to yuck their yum. You know,
like, their yum.
Yeah, that's a thing that like parents say.
Oh, don't make my nice thing bad. Don't yuck my yum.
Yeah, and specifically with food, like if a kid is eating something that you think is gross, don't be like, oh, that's gross. You know,
right, you know, like, right.
Like, yeah, you're supposed to let them eat it, unless it's bad for them.
Of course. No, that makes sense.
Anyway, here we are. We're heads up.
Whew. I knew we'd get there.
The Mystery Millions, where Jonathan just had like an aneurysm because he was looking it up on Hendon Mob and it said 700 plus 300 and he thought that
freaked
was...
Freaked out.
He thought for some reason Hendon had the rake and that they were raking 30% at the World Series of
I
Poker.
I was like, these motherfuckers.
No, the 300 is for the bounties, for the mystery bounties.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah. But we're not talking about mystery bounties. That's a whole strategy thing that we haven't really explored. And it doesn't matter because we're heads up and first place is a million and second place is 600,000.
There's only one bounty left anyway, and who cares? It was like $2,500 and they don't give a damn.
They certainly don't. Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have the extra $2,500.
Right, but whatever. First place is first place. You know, it's just a million, tack it on.
It's $1 million.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got Tyler Brown and Guan Chen. Tell me a little bit about these guys.
Sure thing, Grant. Tyler Brown is a poker player. Wow. He lives in Chicago, Illinois. And coming into this event, he had... Actually, let me make sure this is correct. It is now correct. He had about $200,000 worth of Hendon mob action.
All right.
So not like holy shit or anything like that by any means. And Chen, coming to this event, had about $85,000.
Wow, so this is a huge deal for both of these guys.
These guys have never seen anything like this before. This is the biggest moment of their poker lives by a mile and a half.
Sweet.
Maybe of their lives, period. Who the hell knows?
That's what's so great about these large field, like, not small buy-in, but small compared to some of the potential buy-ins of the World Series of Poker, that often you have cases like this where people are just having, like, the best day of their life.
Yes.
You know, that's really cool.
I mean, they've already locked up in this event $562,382. And they're already like, I mean, of course, you always want to win more, but I imagine when they got heads up, it's like, oh my God, $500,000 already is done. It's in the freaking vault.
So the practical aspect of that must feel really good. What, if you let yourself think about it, doesn't feel so good, is that the difference is almost $500,000 between first and second, and that's a lot of money to you, and that's ridiculous, no matter what your skill advantage is, to be playing for that amount in a game of luck.
100% is. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. And this goes back to the, they don't let you make deals, but this is how they get their $1 million winner first play. And, you know, you get these incredibly high leverage moments, which you wouldn't get otherwise. Because in World Series events, stuff like this with guys who've never seen money like this, of course they would make a fucking deal.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe they'd play for $50,000 and the rest would be, you know, they basically both make, you know, 800K and play for 50.
For sure you would make a deal if you were capable.
I would
But you can't make a deal with the other guy because you can't trust him.
Right. Right. So you can't. But I'm saying if the World Series allowed it, like the EPT does, right? But the World Series gets these higher leverage moments, which we now get to talk about, which wouldn't exist otherwise.
Right. So from
it goes both ways.
From a viewer perspective, it is better.
No question. It's way more exciting to have these like ledges, basically, that you're standing in right near the edge of. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
And we're going to come right up against that in this hand.
Yep. Luckily, there's no ICM heads up, so you don't have to worry about, like, oh, am I punting my stack in a spot where, like, I'm not supposed to, even though the theory of this particular hand says I'm supposed to call.
Right. Am I going to cost myself $100,000 because I'm supposed to just fold and let that other dude bust?
Right. It's not that.
That's all thrown out.
All right. So Tyler Brown is the effective stack between these two players at 12 million big blind.
Okay.
He's got 328 million. So they're almost 30 blinds effective.
Okay.
He's got ace five off, ace of clubs, five of spades, and he opens a bit bigger than you see in most cases, 29 million from the dealer small buy.
I mean, instead of going like 25.
Yeah.
Which, 24.
I mean, there's not really a difference. It's fine.
True. You might get a few more folds at 29 than 24 or 25. I would think you would.
Why not make it 30 if you're going to make it 29?
Save that million, buddy.
Yeah, I guess.
Pocket that mil.
It's just so much easier if you have a 25 chip and a five chip. Just put those out instead of.
I mean, it's pretty easy to have four and a 25 chip just sitting on top of your stack. And every time you're on the button, you just raise like that.
It doesn't really matter because it's heads up, but like it's just going to be slower.
I know.
There's going to be change made. You know, it's a whole thing.
I mean, you've talked me into this in cash games to the point where I used to go smaller in cash games, and you're like, just round it up, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I fought it for a while, and now I pretty much just always, because it is. It's quicker and it's easier, and you do it a million times. So like, I feel you, dog.
Didn't you feel a little bit like a dick every time the dealer had to make change for the other person? Just like...
It does slow everything down.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, ace five off, 29 million from the button. Guang Chen in the big blind has 401 million, so he's not massive chip leader or anything.
No, they're really close.
401 versus 328. He has king nine off, king of clubs, nine of hearts. He makes the call.
Of course he does.
Yeah. I mean, you could three bet this hand.
You could, but this is a perfectly good calling hand, heads up.
Yeah.
Like, this probably should be pretty squarely in our calling range and not too many raises, right? It's
actually
a good king.
At this stack depth, I don't hate this being in our three bet range because if we're going to have a three bet fold range, it's cool to have a blocker. The king blocks some stuff.
Of course.
Any ace at this point is almost too good to be a blocker. Like, it's something you might have to go with.
I would just take some of the worst kings in this and do it. This is like a king that can make a straight. Like any king worse than this can't make a straight. And that's
way
more.
Yeah, I mean the worst kings are better, but you know, the suited ones I might rather flat with and like take a flop, you know.
Right, I understand that.
Anyway, I don't think it's wild to three bet this hand.
But fair enough.
In the three bet fold range, but he makes the call.
Okay.
Pot 70 million.
Sure.
You're going to have to call a dermatologist when I tell you about all the nitro betting deals. They're going to rip your skin off.
Wow, it's like you're going to get a rash or something?
No, they're going to rip your skin off.
The deals are, or you're going to rip your own skin off? Because it's
something's going to happen where there's not skin.
Okay, fair enough.
But in a good way.
Yeah, no, obviously.
Because if the deals are so
it's
good,
a positive,
you're not going to mind calling your dermatologist, right? You're not going to mind at all.
You're like, I no longer have my skin on because there was an incident, which I won't get into the details of
right
now.
But guess what? The value was immense.
Really, really good.
So the skin,
sometimes there are free rolls.
And I think Nitro Betting is going to steal this. That's okay. I license it to them.
Okay.
There's skin ripping deals on Nitro Betting.
I think that is really clever.
Yeah, they're going to love it. And you're going to love the deals, which include lots of sports betting promos, lots of casino games you can play. They throw sports betting promos at our people every once in a while, you know?
Yes,
and
they're
always worth it. Like,
yep.
Notably, in an NFL Survivor Pool recently, one of our people won $1,000.
Yep, free.
For a free roll, just for signing up using our link.
Indeed.
Might as well grant yourself access to that type of opportunity.
Right.
So use the link when you sign up. You also get access to the Poker Guys monthly poker tournament.
Oh, the hallowed halls.
Yeah, it's like you're in some Lord of the Rings castle or something.
Isengard.
Yeah, Galadriel. Is that a thing?
That's a person.
It's like you're near Galadriel.
Right.
In a castle.
In Isengard.
Yeah, in a castle of some type.
Yeah.
The hallowed halls. That's
nice.
They should change the name to that. Skin ripping hallowed halls. What a great time on Nitro Betting. So get in there. Get you some poker.
Mm-hmm.
Get you some sports betting.
Yeah.
NBA, you know, is going to start up after the draft is happening.
Right. The NFL is going to start up kind of soonish.
Yeah. Sort of. It's time
baseball?
To start thinking about fantasy football if you're serious about it, right?
I mean, really serious. You have to be very serious.
Yeah, I'm
about
not
it.
Doing that.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baseball. Yeah, baseball is going on.
Every day.
Some of the people in our audience like baseball for whatever reason.
They have to.
Yeah.
Just mathematically speaking.
Yeah, they probably do. I'm not. If you could explain to me why, that would be great.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm asking them because I know you have no idea.
Yeah. Hey, quick aside.
I thought we were nitro betting right now.
Yeah.
Oh, this is about nitro betting?
No.
Is it skin ripping?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shouldn't skin ripping be like, shouldn't Mountain Dew already own the trademark on skin ripping?
I think they do, but I think there's like a statute situation where 2021 might have been their last year, and they just were like,
right.
2003 was peak skin ripping time, and I think by now the flame has died down enough that nobody's going to really ask for it anymore, so we can probably skate without paying the licensing fees to the damn government anymore.
The damn government.
Yeah.
Also, like another good one would be like Extreme Cheetos would be like for skin ripping good times.
Yeah.
You know?
Anything,
Cheetos Extreme.
Anything that spelled extreme without an E at the beginning in the mid-2000s.
Or at the end.
Extreme.
Extreme.
It's so extreme. I feel like I'm French or something.
Yeah, I feel like you are too.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I've been to France.
Me too. Is this
no.
a competition?
No, you haven't.
I have.
There's no way that you have been to France.
They let me in.
You?
Is this a Jew thing?
Yes. No. All right. So Nitro Betting.
Right.
Is this a Jew thing? The new motto.
Oh, we did it. We did something there. Something good happened.
That's an actual ad for an actual sponsor that pays us in actual money.
Longtime sponsor. Oh, wow. Wow. I feel like we may have broken something that is unfixable.
That's fine. It was worth it.
Yeah, no, it was 100% worth it.
Yeah. Giving Joe Rogan a run for his money. Anyway, the pot is 70 million.
Right. Right.
So we're back.
Ace five
for Tyler Brown on the button. King nine for Guang Chen in the big blind. They're both unsuited. The flop is unsuited. It is deuce 3-3.
Okay.
Suits aren't going to play a role.
Good.
Diamonds, spades, and hearts if you're a real stickler.
I can be that.
Guang checks.
Fine.
Brown has flopped a gut shot, and he has ace high. there's a lot to defend against. There's a lot of hands that are just going to fold. It feels like a mandatory small continue spot, right?
For sure. With the gutter and ace high, absolutely.
It's probably a mandatory small continue spot with like 100% of the range against the general
poker. Right. We're going to get a lot of folds, you would think. If he's super sticky, I guess we could check back sometimes because we've got showdown value, but I don't know. When we're this short, I wouldn't expect him to be super sticky.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, Brown bets 18 million.
Okay.
Which is cool. Cool sizing into 70 million.
Sure. But like, you know, if you have 9-10 off or something like that, are you really going to call? You might, but you just put yourself in so much trouble. Just fold and move on. So, all right. I like it.
He doesn't have 9-10 off Guang Chen. He has King 9 off.
Yeah.
So is this good enough to continue for this sizing on this board? I mean, the SPR is becoming a problem nonetheless.
I mean, it's really cheap. If he's been opening kind of every hand on the button, which I assume he is, like his button raising percentage is probably really high.
Yeah.
And if he's c-betting most boards, which he might be, King 9 rates to be doing okay, but we're at a position, we don't really ever feel great if we hit anything. I guess if we hit a 9, we're just never folding.
A 9 we feel pretty good about.
A king we feel less good about,
yeah, but still like, we go with it.
We're going to have to hold on with a king. We mostly miss those things, though, anyway. Once in a while, we're good, but we have to get to showdown with this. We might be able to if we call once and it goes and checks down, though, and he may just give up and not put any more money and just assume like he can't get us to fold.
By now, we probably know a little bit about our opponent.
Yes.
So if Tyler Brown is the type of guy who's going to barrel more than once most of the time, we probably shouldn't call.
Right.
Unless we really want to hold on with King High. There's not really good reason for that.
That seems crazy.
So we should either fold or raise against that type
of player.
I think
that's way better.
Yeah.
I prefer folding or raising for sure.
Yeah. I think that's right.
I mean, raising is a pretty sweet option here. Like, we don't have any outs if we get, you know, like any clean outs. Like, it's not a semi bluff, is what I'm trying to say. Of course, we have outs. But it'd be nice to have, like, we're drawing some awesome hand if we don't have clear value.
Yeah.
But this is the kind of board that clearly favors our range. Even though he's opening the button, it's fucking deuce 3-3. I mean, like, he might really fold some hands that have deuces and three in them preflop. So might we, admittedly. But maybe it doesn't favor our range. Maybe we all have the same number.
I don't think it favors our range, but we can certainly threaten a three. We can threaten having a three.
It's hard for him to have a three, right?
Yeah.
It's just hard. I think it's a very reasonable check-raising candidate.
Yeah, and there's not a flush draw, so it's even better.
Yeah, it's more believable, right?
Also, we're less likely to get jammed on, because if Brown had a flush draw, he might just jam, right?
Yep, so. And even if his made hands aren't going to love it, they may hold on, but they're not going to love it.
Yeah.
Right? If he has two sevens here, I mean, he's got to call the check raise. Is he going to just go down with the ship here with two sevens? Probably, but it's not 100%.
And we have six clean outs against that.
And not only do we have six clean outs, an ace or a six might be a really good bluffing card if he calls.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, maybe even a four, because we might do this with 5-6, or a five, because we might do this with 4-6, right? So, like, there's a lot of cards we could fake it on, also known as bluffing, on the turn, even if we get called.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a reasonable plan. I like that plan a lot. I think we should probably do it.
That's what Guang does.
Okay.
Raises to 72 million.
Wow. Big raise. And does he need to be that big?
I mean, from a pot size perspective, it's pretty big for the flop, but you know, he's trying to really fold out like ace 10, I guess. Like the big aces.
Yeah. There's 88 million in the pot when he puts in the raise. So I guess it's less than a pot.
Yeah.
Feels like 65, 62 is probably going to do the same thing. Probably 60.
It's possible he's observed that it would not against Brown.
Possibly. And I can understand when you're there, you're like, if I just put a few more chips in this, it actually gets more folds. It's worth the I'd rather overpay a little bit and be wrong than underpay and be wrong. It's, you know, there's so much more value to overpay a little bit and be wrong.
So Brown's in a sticky situation now.
Yeah. This is shitty.
This is the problem with doing the like equity protection C bet on a board where you actually kind of have something.
Yeah.
Like you have showdown value with ace high, not against what Guang is representing, but against Guang's range. And you obviously have a gut shot to a hand that would be pretty powerful. I think this is a very interesting spot, and I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Certainly, if we're deeper, we're supposed to call.
Yes, but we are not that deep. We started with 328, and if we called this raise, it would take us down to about 220 or something.
Jeez, so we have less than 20 blinds just calling. We have a 5 in our hand, which isn't great.
Because we block all of the gut shots and open-enders.
Yep. By the way, even having the ace ain't great for that, right? Because ace 4, ace 5, which we have one of those, but we block all that. Those are some of the most obvious bluffs. Even if he has a deuce, he's beating us. I don't know if he's check raising a deuce. Some guys do. Some guys don't.
You're making excellent points about we're blocking the wrong things.
I kind of want to just throw my hand away right now. Like, I feel like ace 10, see, it's weird because in some ways ace 10 is a better call because we're blocking less stuff, but we don't have that. We could just hit it on the turn. We could just hit a four and be like, oh, well, now we have a monster.
Well, I'd just rather have a pair. That sounds easier.
Yeah.
Just have a pair.
That does sound easy. You have a pair of 10s. You're like, cool, I unblock all the bluffs.
Yeah.
I'm never folding.
Right.
Let's find out what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an easy life. Having tens is an easy life.
We just don't have overpairs enough of the time. We're going to have to call with other things, right? So ace highs are a pretty obvious one.
And so, yeah, it tears you in two directions, right? Because this is a bad ace high from a blocker perspective, but it's good in that there are miracle outs against some of the made hands.
I think it's going to have to come down to, is Chen the kind of guy who we've seen be bluffy, aggressive on paired boards or just take lots of shots? If we see that, if we've seen a lot of that behavior, and we've been playing on the streamed table for hours and hours, we know we should have good information on him, even if we, and we've probably played with him earlier in the tournament too, but even if we haven't, we should have some sense. If he's been doing that a bunch, that feels really different than if he hasn't. If he hasn't been, I'm inclined just to throw my hand away right now.
Yeah.
If I think he's, like, takes a lot of shots, at, you know, like, yeah, it's hard for you to have it, I'm going to make your life hard, I'm more inclined to call and see what happens on the turn. Mm. But it sucks to call at all because we're putting in so much of our stack.
Yeah, I think this is a genuinely really tricky spot.
Okay, here's another option.
Three bet?
Yep. Do we just we could just rip it ourselves and be like, well, every time you don't have a three, you're done.
I kind of like that.
Every time he has a three, we have a few outs. We've got hopefully four outs unless he has 3-4 and then we're just dead.
But it's, I mean, the problem with ripping it is that it's a terrible story, which maybe it doesn't matter.
It's a terrible story.
Like, we would never do it with an overpair.
Never in a million years. Would we ever do it with a three?
No.
Never. We'd never do it with deuces. We'd never do it with any big hand in a million years.
The only thing it effectively does is shuts down the bluffs, which can be good because the bluffs all have reasonable equity against us. That's fine. It's a big pot already.
As long as he's got a lot of bluffs in him. But if we think he's got that many bluffs, I guess we could call and see turns and see like what kind. Now, he's got sort of almost a random bluff here.
Yeah. Right?
So that gets weird.
Yeah.
Because now we don't know what we're trying to dodge. If we think he's got basically 4-5, 4-6, 5-6, ace, 4, ace, 5, then we know more what we're trying to dodge.
Except that we have, you know,
I know, we have
one of those hands.
I know.
So, yeah, interesting.
I'm inclined to just fold my hand, I think.
I think you're right. I think, actually, I could find merit in all three options. Mm-hmm. I really can.
Yeah.
But he decides to call.
Okay. Him calling says to me either he calls too much in this spot or he thinks Chen is just bluffy a lot here.
I think that's right.
And that's fine. If you think he's very, very bluffy, the three bet or the call are the only options. We're never folding. It's just a question of how do we want to proceed.
Yep.
Cool.
$214 million in the pot.
Okay.
The turn is the queen of spades.
Okay. Here we go.
Brown has $227 million left. As Guang, how do you want to continue? This sucks.
We just got called. We did not pick up a card that is scary at all, and it also did not help us. I think I'm check folding.
Yeah.
I'm done. And any ace, 4, 5, 6, maybe even a 3, king or 9, we could continue on.
I think we probably don't really continue on a king or a 9.
We can just check call.
Yeah.
Well, if there's a 9, if maybe we hit a 9, I think we're continuing on a 9.
Yeah, just to protect our equity.
Right, and if he's got 2 7s, that 9 shouldn't seem scary, so he can bluff catch the same.
Right.
He's not going to fold
a king. A king we should probably check call.
Okay, but in the end, like, it's a 1-to-1 stack to pot, even less, right? So, like, if he's got us beat, we're getting it in either way. The only thing we can do is we can invite him to bluff by checking. So if we think, so then we'll have to make a determination on, you know, how often he's got enough of a hand to go with. But I don't think we can protect our stack once we hit a king. We're getting it all in one way or another.
I agree.
But anyway, this is not any of those cards. We don't even have a spade in our hand. If we had the king of spades in our hand, you could maybe talk me into, okay, there's 2 spades on the board. If the third spade comes, we can shove the river maybe and, you know, whatever we block. We don't have that. Like the fake backdoor flush blocker. You know? We don't have that going. So I'm done with this hand.
Let me try to think about reasons to do the opposite because, I mean, one would simply be player tendencies. Like if Brown has been very sticky in these scenarios, then he's got too many folds for it to be a bad idea for us to shove. You know, that's possible.
I mean, he's calling with all his single pairs on the flop. Is he calling with all of them on the turn if we shove when the queen comes or effectively shove?
Yeah.
Probably, right?
I think
he's got 2 7s. He just has to call.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's going to.
I mean, 2-5 sort of sucks, but he just has to call.
So if he's not floating with hands like ace high, we should shut it down.
Right. And even if he's floating with some ace highs.
But he's more weighted towards pairs.
We should shut it down.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
What do you think about smaller bets?
Okay.
What about betting like 50 million?
Huh. So there's 214 in the pot. And as Chen, we now have like, we still have like 310 million in front of us, right?
And yeah, and Brown has 227.
Right. Huh. You know, I think I just want to give up anyway. I don't even like betting 50 million. He called. What's he calling us with? Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is like a best case scenario, essentially. He's calling us like with a, what feels like a really bad hand to call us with. We can probably get this hand to fold. Fine. We can get ace five to fold. But like, it feels like a lot of the hands probably aren't folding. And the hands that are like ace high type hands, the bigger card type hands that called once, that queen doesn't suck for them necessarily. Yeah. He can hit that queen and he's never going anywhere, right?
Yeah.
We're just repping a three if we jam, right? And maybe a queen, I guess. But like, it's just not good. We just don't have enough value.
I'm wondering if we do a better job repping a three by betting smaller.
Right. Well, it's scarier for sure. For sure. It's basically 1-to-1 stack to pot. We bet 50 million. The thing is, if he's got something, he's not going to fold for 50 million. So then we're going to have to shove the river, right?
Yeah.
Like if he has two sevens, he ain't folding.
Yeah.
He's got. It gets weird if he, let's say he somehow has ace five like he does. And he, like this is the exact situation. Their hands are their hands. Chen bets 50 million. Are you folding as Brown for 50? There's 204, there's 264 in there. You're getting over 5-to-1. You're in position.
It's not a good enough price to hit the four outer.
It's not. You have ace high though.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough. That's a tough spot with this exact hand.
I actually think I like the small bet shove river better because if
it's better story.
If we're trying to fold out specifically hands like sevens, eights, nines, tens, whatever like that, I think it's unlikely thing either way, but it's more likely with that line versus and like the fact that they could hit two outs and have a never fold is not a huge deal, right?
I just feel like, okay, we have king high. It's not great. It's barely showdownable. In fact, I guess it's just not showdownable. I guess our opponent could...
They could have 4-5.
Yeah, but he's probably, if we check, he's probably just going to shove on us, right? Once in a while, he'll just check, he'll give up and check it down, but rarely. I feel like we have to have some give-ups, man. This feels like a good hand to give up with.
It does. If we're going to check raise the flop with a random two cards and get called, it seems like we can give up on the turn.
Exactly.
I think
no scare cards came and nothing that helped us. We don't have any blockers, nothing at all. I just want out.
All right, I agree.
Okay.
Guang does not. He moves in
okay.
for 227 million.
Well,
effective.
It turns out it's like he can see through the other guy's cards because this is a hand that can't call, obviously.
And Brown calls.
Of course he calls. Obviously, I've been setting you fools up the whole time. Yeah, Brown calls. And it's for his whole stack.
And it's for more than pot.
And it's for like almost $500,000 in real money.
Yeah.
Potentially. Now, he doesn't win the tournament if he calls, but he certainly loses if he's wrong.
He has a much higher chance to win the tournament if he calls and is right.
Right, because Chen is going to be down to like six blinds or something, right? Seven blinds. So it's not for the tournament, but it's essentially for the tournament.
Which is, you know, it's not like 227 is that bad. You still have almost 20 bigs if you fold in and are done.
You have 19 bigs. It's fine, right? You have to be really sure you're right.
So this must be a player tendency thing.
Yep.
Guang must be just going nuts.
Yep.
That's got to be the reason because I can't find a great... Certainly, if we did distribution, we're not going to find a good reason to call because
this is the worst.
This is the worst hand to call with. We block all of the draws that Guang could have. There's no flush draw on the flop.
I mean, 4-5 is the worst hand to call with, but I feel you.
Okay, yeah, of course.
But of course, that's not a real... for like reasonable hands to like even consider calling, it's ace-4 and ace-5 are the worst hands to call with, right? Everything else is better than that.
Yep.
That we could consider calling. So it's very interesting that he's like, oh no, I'm not cutting off any of the bottom of my distribution here, buddy. Everything that gets here, essentially, everything that I could consider calling with that gets here is going in the call.
So this is either a pure player tendency call or just a bad call.
Right. Right. Now, I watched some of this final table and I will say I thought Brown played well.
Okay.
It looked like he was very thoughtful. So my belief, and I don't remember what Chen was doing, so I can't say like, oh, Chen was doing all this stuff, and that's why he did this. I don't remember that much. But I remember like having an opinion about Brown and thinking like he was clearly the best player at the table.
Okay.
And the most thoughtful player at the table.
So it's possible that Chen had been showing something that led Brown to make this call, because as we see, the results bear out that Chen did have a random bluff.
I mean, well, let's think of it. Let's say that if he's seen Chen on these types of boards, check raise with actually having trips though, let's say, but on the turn he's never shoving, he's always betting small, for example. So he's just like, you just never have it here.
Yep.
You just never ever have it. So it's weird that I block it, but it doesn't matter because you never have it.
Right. I could find a way, like, so from a distribution perspective, we're never going to find a redeeming quality of calling with ace five.
Right.
But if, to your point, Chen is always betting smaller on the turn if he has trips, is never check raising a two, and always three bets a pair pre-flop,
right,
then we're always winning pretty much unless he has a better ace high, which he's probably almost always three betting pre-flop.
Right. And maybe not shoving. Well, I guess he really might shove turn based on what he's doing, but that would be very unlucky for us.
Yeah.
But even then we actually have a lot of chop outs against those ace highs because there's a paired board and there's a queen on the board.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have ace jack, right? It wouldn't be that high. So
I could see a reason to call based on all that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
But this is all predicated on Chen never bets this big on the turn with trips.
Right.
But if he does sometimes, then it's a problem.
Well, it doesn't have to be sometimes, right? It just has to be like rarely.
Yeah.
It's about frequencies. But you know how like in the smaller tournaments, like $100 tournaments, $200 tournaments, there are some guys who when they have it, just bet tiny because they're so afraid of losing someone. This is a $1,000 buy-in at the World Series. This is a smaller tournament.
Yeah.
It's possible he's just seen that Chen is one of those guys.
It's possible.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but it's possible he just knows that. Or he just knows Chen is a complete maniac.
Well, if your opinion is that Tyler Brown was the best player at the table, and he makes this call that, from a theory perspective, looks to have a lot of issues, it's possible that that's what's going on.
My guess is, it's Chen either has very clear betting size tells, or he's a maniac to the point, and his value is almost never going to play it this way. Also, like, he's when he shoves the turn.
Yeah.
Right? But even if he plays all his strong value this way, but if he's a maniac too, you're just like, I lose 15% of the time. But I actually hit the gut shot once in a while anyway.
Well, Brown doesn't hit the gut shot, but Chen doesn't hit his outs. So
yeah,
another queen comes and Brown wins this hand and ends up winning the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Chen is decimated. He's down to like six blinds and I think is gone one hand later. And that's it. And Brown just wins.
So he probably feels like kind of a baller winning a bracelet that way.
It is an incredibly baller way to do it. To call it all off when you still have 20 blinds in this, where for $450,000 in real money right in front of you, that is super baller.
And 2 days later, he final tabled a PLO bracelet
event.
The
next day, actually. Officially next day, but probably it's actually sort of hours-wise, like 2 days later. Yeah, he finished sixth for like another like 100K.
So it's like mini Greg Merson over here.
Mini Greg Merson, exactly. Yeah, six for $92,000. But that's nothing compared to the $1 million you just won. But what a little run to go on. Also, to be like, yeah. You know how that happens sometimes?
Yeah.
When you start winning, you just get really confident. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the waters sort of part for you. And you can just walk anywhere and move easily through the world in poker for a little while. And you just feel like you're on a different level than you were. And everything just works. Feels like that happened for Tyler Brown.
Well, good for him.
Good for him. Hey, the first time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates.